Seriously, why?
Their own organization called the Guardian Angels. You see them with red berets.
I admire Curtis Sliwa, and I think that he takes his life into his own hands doing what he does.
Curtis Sliwa, the Guardian Angels founder and leader.
We've got Curtis Sliwa from WABC Radio.
Curtis Sliwa, legendary New York.
The Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa. What happened today, why, and what's next? Live, local, on it, 77 WABC.
Our local officials have been discussing congestion pricing in New York City to try to encourage more people to use mass transit. Obviously, getting people to use mass transit, period, is a good thing. Whether they're coming in on New Jersey Transit, which has been rated the worst in the nation by the feds, I concur. Having taken New Jersey Transit Friday night out to the 4th Ward of Patterson, we're waiting a month of Sundays. I concur. And then, obviously, the IRT, BMD, IND, the subway service, which is just fraught with problems. Or the Long Island Railroad, which had the worst on-time service in the history of the railroad. That's part of the MTA, money-taking agency. But before we get into what the man in charge of the subways and buses brought in from the UK across the pond had to say, just a quick update. Today was the anniversary of the execution, the assassination of hero police officer Edward Byrne, who was stationed outside of Arjun's bungalow in Southeast Queens. Remember, this was back at the height of the crack cocaine menace, 1988, at 107th Avenue and Inwood Street. And it was under the orders of Howard Pappy Mason that he sent his underlings to whack the police officer in uniform who was protecting Arjun, who had been firebombed twice and was hell-bent on showing up in court and testifying against Pappy Mason's crew. He did not believe that snitches get stitches and end up in ditches. And when they executed Edward Byrne, it started TNT and the massive crackdown against crack cocaine in the city. And today is also the anniversary of the first attempt to blow up the World Trade Center, which was masterminded by none other than Sheikh Omar Abdel Rahman, the blind-eyed Santa Claus hat-wearing cleric of hate, who luckily passed away last year in Springfield, Missouri, at the Federal Medical Center where he was incarcerated for that crime. That one was masterminded by Ramzi Youssef, and we didn't learn much from that because it just enticed al-Qaeda through Osama bin Laden to try a second time. And unfortunately, that time of 9/11, they were successful. But let's go back to the beginning of the summer. Remember Andrew Evilize Cuomo, King Cuomo II, the son of Mario Franciabruta Cuomo, King Cuomo I. He warned all of us what kind of a summer it was going to be.
It will be a summer of hell for commuters.
And it has continued to be a fall of hell for commuters, particularly if you're using the subways of the MTA money-taking agency service. And we have a part-time director of operations in Joe Loda, who spends most of his time at the NYU Medical Center, the Langone Center, because that's where he gets his paycheck. And we have a brand-new MTA president who runs the subways and the bus system, Andy Byford, originally from the U.K., ran the underground system there, and then recently the subway system of Toronto and was brought into New York City. And this was his initial observations of how difficult life is here running a mass transit system.
What has been your biggest surprise since you got here?
I think really the scale of the job. I mean, I knew it would be a big job. It is hugely complex.
And then he went on to talk about the intense politics surrounding every decision and naturally the media scrutiny.
I think probably the intensity of the politics, the intensity of the media scrutiny. You know, I've been exposed to this pretty much everywhere I work, but it's particularly intense here.
And then Andy Byford, the limey blimey from across the pond in the UK, said something that made absolutely no sense whatsoever. Why is there so much congestion, such overcrowding on the subway system?
I mean, the price of gas is a factor, very low gas price. The rise of Uber and Lyft, so there are alternatives. The fact that in some cases economies are slowing down.
So, in essence, he was saying, yeah, ridership is down, but congestion during rush hour is up. He's blaming that on the price of gas. Doesn't he realize it's been at an all-time low? Anyway, on the line to discuss that and so many of the mass transit issues affecting our tri-state area is Nick Cifuentes. In fact, he is the director of the Tri-State Transportation Campaign. Thanks for jumping on board on the drive home at 5 again, Nick.
Thanks for having me. Always glad to be here.
Now, Nick, as part of your coverage, your saturation coverage of mass transit in the area, do you cover New Jersey Transit?
We do cover New Jersey Transit, yes.
Can I suggest that I tag on to the federal study that says it sucks as I had to take New Jersey Transit to Paterson, New Jersey on Friday night? I mean, it is bad, Nick.
It's really bad. And you know what? Here's the thing. You're totally right. You know, it was rated the worst transit agency in the country, and it's desperately in need of some fixes. You know, I think we're pretty hopeful with Governor Murphy there and with the new New Jersey Transit Director, Kevin Corbett, who I must say was a member of our board up until very recently when he became executive director over there. I think there might be some good changes afoot. And, it, you know, at this point, it's like the only direction we can go is up.
All right. Speaking of going up, once again, our subway system in New York City, part of the MTA, in chaos earlier today as subway lines were delayed. The NQRW, the Q chain, especially after all the money was put into it to fix three subway stations to add on to it to the tune of billions of dollars. Is Andy Byford, is he the answer? Is he the Mashiach, the miracle worker who's going to turn all of this around?
I mean, I'm pretty hopeful that he's going to do some good stuff. He certainly said a lot of the right things. He's talked about improvements in the subway system we have to have, improvements to buses that we need to make. And he comes out of two really successful transit systems in London and Toronto. But here's the thing. You know, we're just not going to fix the MTA until we go deeper than just one guy. You know, it's really going to be about making sure the MTA has the funding it needs and then that it actually is held accountable to spend that money correctly. That's a huge task, and that really comes down to the governor and our state legislators to get that right, too.
Yeah, and I would think, Nick, since they're pushing now the idea of congestion pricing to force more people to use mass transit, nobody's going to really make that move unless the mass transit is running fairly decently, correct?
Yeah, and we've talked about this in pushing for congestion pricing, which we are supportive of, but it's really hard to argue to people, hey, you know what, you're going to have to pay to come into Manhattan, but the system isn't going to get any better. That's why I think we need to be making the kinds of repairs that Andy Byford is talking about now. You know, we need to improve subway service as much as we can and direct as many resources into that as we can right now. Same thing with our buses. We need to make our buses actually work again because we know that they don't. We know they're, you know, moving at almost walking speeds in places like Midtown Manhattan. But, you know, if we can make those kinds of fixes, it's a lot easier to tell somebody, all right, you know, now actually service is better and you don't have to drive into all that congestion in Manhattan if you don't want to anymore.
And, you know, Nick, if that wasn't bad enough, the fact that New Jersey Transit really does suck. And the buses and the subway system of the MTA, the money-taking agency, seem to continue to have all kinds of signal and delay problems. There's the LIRR, which is the largest suburban line in the country, reported more service delays than ever in its history for the month of January. And things don't look like they're going to get any better there, do they?
It's a real challenge, and it really is about the agency taking a step back and saying, how are we spending our resources, and are we doing it in the best way to serve customers? You know, just last week, the MTA board approved a plan to put $1 billion into fixing up subway stations, but most of these fixes are going to be primarily cosmetic. You know, we do need to ask ourselves, and the agency needs to ask itself, if we're going to spend $1 billion, what's the best possible way that we can spend it to make sure people are not going to have the kind of delays and breakdowns that we're sadly becoming accustomed to?
And Nick Cifuentes, as the governor and the mayor point fingers at one another, blaming each other for the MTA subway and bus service problems, who's really at fault here from when all is said and done?
I mean, we know the MTA is a state-run agency. The state owns it. The state appoints the largest number of people to the board. They control the finances. So when you get right down to it, Albany's responsible. And if we're going to do anything to fix it, it's up to the governor, it's up to the legislature, and people need to step up to the plate and do the right thing because the status quo isn't acceptable anymore.
I do appreciate that. And if there's any solace in that federal report, if you use the subway bus system of New York City or the Long Island Railroad or Metro North, run by the money-taking agency, the MTA, New Jersey Transit has rated out worse than even the MTA. And after having traveled to Patterson Friday night to the 4th Ward to deal with the Uzi-toting, dope-sucking, psychopathic killing machines, it really does suck.
The Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa.
He's really a New York City hero.
Yes.
He's an American hero.
WABCRadio.com.
Earlier today, the Vetrano family was back in State Supreme Court in Queens because they were there following up on another court hearing that involves the killer of their daughter, the slain Queens jogger from Howard Beach, Katrina Vetrano. And there were some developments in that case. Phil, thanks for coming on board again and give us an update.
Curtis, anytime. It's my pleasure to speak with you.
All right. So what was the purpose of this hearing? What was defense counsel for the murderer of your daughter trying to say in court?
Okay, first thing they were trying to do is saying that he was questioned illegally. Then they were saying the DNA which he signed a release for in front of his mother was obtained illegally. And they're saying the two confessions that he voluntarily told the police he wanted to give and did give two voluntary confessions were illegal. And that his civil rights were violated. You know, the same liberal rigmarole that they always go through.
Okay, and who is the judge that was hearing this part of the case?
Judge Gregory Lasek.
All right, did he come up with a decision today, or did he put it off to the future?
No, it was today was the day that he addressed the motions that they put in about 2 months ago. And every single one of them was denied. So we're in a good place, being that everything that defense tried to throw out, and mind you, they never said that he didn't do it. They're just saying he wasn't questioned properly. That's, you know, they don't care if he did it or not. They just care if he was questioned. But Judge Lasek threw everything out, so their backs are basically up against the proverbial wall.
Right. Well, obviously, the concern here is that justice is done to the killer of your daughter, Katrina Vetrano. But there's also another thing that's on trial here, which you fought along with your supporters for, and that's the use of a different type of DNA. And if you could just take a moment to describe what that is and how different it is than what traditionally was a DNA test.
Well, familiar DNA, which now, you know, there's a lawsuit against, but it's frivolous and it's not going anywhere, so I'm not worried. Familiar DNA is if you are, you have a relative that's a criminal and his DNA is in the database and you have committed a crime, but your DNA is not in the database, they can track you down through a brother or a father or a grandfather. That's all that is. It's just another method of search. That's all it is. It's another tool that we gave the PD. And I could tell you and on your entire audience, there are 12 cases right now in New York State that are being worked on with familiar DNA.
Now, so, Phil Vetrano, what is the argument against it? Like, for instance, I understand the defense counsel, he's trying to knock everything out of the box.
Mm-hmm.
But there are others who are not involved in your case who are saying, hey, look, Phil, it may be important to the case in resolving who killed your daughter, but there are problems with this. What is it that they're saying about it?
About the familiar DNA you're
talking
about?
Yes.
Okay. They are saying that they can compare it to a genetic stop and frisk. They're saying that it can target people of color. You know, the whole rigmarole all over again. But the people that are saying that are ignorant of the facts. They don't know what it is because DNA doesn't know the difference between me and you. DNA is just that. They don't know. It doesn't know color. It doesn't know anything other than this is the individual. So they're saying that there are more minorities that are in prison, and that happens to be true, but that's not my fault, Curtis.
No, completely understood. And then finally, you know what the defense attorney is going to have in terms of a conversation with a guy accused of killing your daughter. He's probably going to sit him down and say, hey, we struck out on every count today in trying to block the prosecution. My suggestion would be you take a plea and just cop to some time. If, in fact, they were to do that, Phil, would that satisfy you?
Tomorrow. I would do it tomorrow, Curtis. Mm. This is what we're hoping for.
Mm.
You know, I would love just to get him in jail. Get him in jail.
So you're not interested in a court process, you know, in which he'd be locked up, triple life without parole, a full court hearing in front of a jury with a determination to follow. If he were to cop a plea tomorrow and he had to do time, that would satisfy you and your wife?
Yes. The right amount of time, Curtis. The right amount of time.
Oh, no. Understood. But I guarantee you, you know they're having that conversation tonight, along with his family, telling him it doesn't look good. So maybe the best thing is you let me sit down with the assistant Queens DA and try to negotiate you a deal. We'll be continuing to follow this case, Phil, both on behalf of all of our listeners and those who want to seek justice. You'll never be able to forget. This is one of those cases that you will never be able to forget. 10 years from now, 20 years from now, you probably remember where you were when you heard that the jogger, Katrina Vetrano, was strangled and killed as she had gone out for her nightly jog right there in Spring Creek next to New Howard Beach, something that she had done on a regular basis. And I guarantee you that that image of the family and their suffering will last a lifetime. And when people seek justice, that image will always pop up in their mind.
Curtis Sliwa.
He's a man of the people.
Between the Scylla and Charybdis of commentary.
The Drive at 577 WABC.
You know, I'm on before Michael Savage that you can hear from 3 to 5, and then I follow him on the drive home at 5. And sometimes he is so off the hook, like when he talks about the transmission of disease.
I've been trying to warn America about what unscreened immigrants will be bringing into America. You're not going to hear it, but we have tuberculosis, hand and foot disease, Chagos disease, previously eradicated from the area of Southern California. Other diseases that are emerging, including include H1N1 swine flu, chickenpox, amongst Border Patrol agents. The Border Patrol is being threatened with lawsuits and firing if they disclose this.
Well, he came close with chickenpox. Not quite there. In this case, Savage, it's measles. Except it wasn't a third world outbreak. No, it's with some wealthy tourist from the land down under, Australia, who was going to the Met while he was staying in New York, the Museum of Art, and staying at top-shelf five-star hotels. But it's caused a measles scare. On the line to discuss it, Mark Siegel, professor of medicine at NYU School of Medicine, and a Fox News medical correspondent and contributor. Mark, we haven't really seen a measles outbreak in a month of Sundays, have we?
No, we only see about 180 cases a year here in the United States, maximum. And, of course, that's because of a really effective vaccine. We talk a lot about the flu shot, but the measles vaccine is extremely effective and really shuts this thing down. And this disease is about 95% contagious if you haven't been vaccinated. So if you're sitting next to somebody with the measles and they're breathing and coughing on you and you haven't had that vaccine, you got a problem.
But isn't a lot of the initial symptoms similar to what they say would indicate you have the flu? You've got high fever, you're coughing, you're sneezing, you got you're schwitzing 1 minute, you got cold sweats the next, and you don't really see the blotches until maybe 4 or 5 days later?
True, but the one thing that you see fairly early on that's characteristic, Curtis, and you did name it, I'm anointing you as my successor. But the thing you didn't mention is those red eyes. When you see those red eyes, you're thinking measles. You just don't see that from a lot of things. So if you're coughing and schwitzing and sneezing and you have a high fever, you know, and you're just feeling like crap and you have really red eyes, I worry about measles. And then a few days later, and it's variable, that rash will occur. And that rash is confluent. You can't miss this rash. It looks like whole parts of your body have turned red. That's the rash. Now, it's about a week or 10 days after being exposed when you would get it. So he was basically a problem around the 21st, up till the 21st of February, which means we're still looking for this up until the first few days of March, and we're holding our breaths. Because he was in a lot of places. He was in Quinta Inns. He was in, you know, Orange County Regional Medical Center. He was in the Metropolitan Museum of Art. He was in Comfort Inn. I mean, we need to give next time he comes in here without the measles, we'll tell him where to stay, right? But he was in a lot of places, and he spread this thing around.
But we won't see him in an advertisement for the Holiday Inn Express, right?
That's for sure. I don't think the Comfort Inn wants anyone to know that he was there. And
but,
I don't think the Metropolitan is going to put a picture of him up anywhere.
But, Mark, many of us baby boomers, we did have measles. I remember what it was like. Not all kids, but quite a few. If it wasn't measles, it was smallpox. But I remember the one dreaded measles we didn't want to have was Achtung! German measles. Now, how is German measles or even rubella different than old-fashioned measles?
Well, it's actually very similar, and the rash is a little different because it's a little more spread out. But a lot of this, you don't have the red eyes. A lot of the symptoms otherwise are the same. That's why a lot of people that had German measles thought they had regular measles. And the only way you can actually tell is with a titer, which brings me to the next point. If you didn't have measles, now I'm so happy you said we're around the same age, Curtis, because you look so fantastic, by the way. Anyone that listens to you every day doesn't see you. I'm proud to be around the same age as you. But look, if you didn't have measles and you got the vaccine, I want to warn people that vaccine can wear off. And I, in travelers, a lot of times find that I have to give a booster. So you really want to get that checked. Because that is a really terrific vaccine if you weren't a baby boomer like you and me.
So taking airborne is not going to protect you from measles.
Or anything, by the way. Sorry to knock any products here, but what you want to do to be protected from measles is get that vaccine. And any respiratory virus this time of year, you know, I think you wear a mask if you're coughing, and you want to wash your hands all the time. And, you know, you don't want to be huddling close to each other, and watch out for those surfaces, because the measles virus can live on the surface. Go to the Metropolitan Museum of Art. I don't care if you go to those motels or not, but go to the Museum of Art, but just wash your hands.
Oh, yeah, of course. Over and over again while singing Happy Birthday to Me, Happy Birthday to Me. Mine will be March 26th, Happy Birthday to Me. I'll be 64. But, you know, I'll never forget going to PS114, Jungle Jenny Wilson's class in the fifth grade. No, make that sixth grade, excuse me. Some kid named Mark, a Jewish kid, came down with not rubella, not regular measles, but German measles. And the other Jewish kid said, "What? You have German measles? What a shanda!" Yeah, imagine that. To be a Jewish kid in the 1960s and to be diagnosed with German measles. What a double shanda.
Curtis Sliwa.
The next mayor of the city of New York.
Drive at 5.
Curtis Sliwa, legendary New York.
77 WABC.
Manja, 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 Porky. So is the tale of the Banano Capo, John Porky Zancuccio from Staten Island. He's under house arrest because he had been busted by the FBI forever busting Italians. With Eugene Boopsy Castelli. Yep, that nickname is Boopsy. Albert Al Muscles Armetta. The Capo, George Grumpy Trapiano. And Joseph Joey Blue Eyes Santapiallo. And they were busted on all kinds of racketeering charges. But all of a sudden, you got Porky's aunt dies. I probably have agreed. So she's laid out in an Italian funeral parlor. And he's claiming that part of the Italian tradition is that you got to mangia in between breaks in the wake. And then also you got to go to a bakery to get the box of cannolis. So he goes and he sits at Frank Camuso's Bella Mama Rose, run by the Gambino crime family. So, you know, he's doing business there. And then in between breaks at the funeral parlor, he goes over to Danino's, does some business there. And then eventually he's there to stop for a box of cannolis at a bakery on Highland Boulevard. Well, the feds have said no more house arrest detention, you know, with the bracelet, the ankle bracelet around you fat boy. It's time for you to get remanded to jail because you've broken the agreement. And what did Porky do? He started crying. But my aunt died. You fugazi.